Okay, in our last class, we left off. We were talking about leading prayers, and the section we left off on was, do they have to be a Christian? When we were talking about, okay, that's 53, page 53 on y'all's list. Now, as far as leading prayers, do they have to, let's say in the assembly, if we have someone that's going to go up there and lead us in prayer, do they have to be a Christian? It's not a trick question.
In front of the assembly?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I was just checking. It wasn't a trick question. Okay. I am gonna after we go through this part, I am gonna address some of the things that came up in class as far as Acts 10. We'll look at that in a moment. But right now, as far as what we were looking at, as far as leading in an assembly, that they have to be a Christian, okay? In James 5:16, I think we did look at that in class. I think that's where we left off, actually. In James 5:16, we see this idea at the end of that verse, talking about the effective prayer of a righteous man can accomplish much. So this idea of this needs to be someone that is righteous. Okay. Now in John 9:31, let's look over there. John 31, first part of that verse says that we know that God does not hear sinners. Okay? And we'll have some more to say about that verse further on, because I'm going to use that verse also in answering some of this question in Acts. But, so we see this idea of who God wants to hear from. Or who He does here. And Proverbs, let's look at Proverbs 15. In verse 8, this helps tell us a little bit about too. It says, the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of an upright or of the upright is His delight. So it contrasts these upright and the wicked as far as who He hears from. In Isaiah, we'll look over there. Isaiah 1. Let's see, verse 15. All right. Isaiah 1:15 says, so when you spread out your hands in prayer, I will hide my eyes from you. Yes, even though you multiply prayers, I will not listen. Your hands are covered with blood. So, we see here that had something to do with their condition, that God was not going to hear them because of their offerings and prayers did not matter because of their evil deeds. So, as we looked at above, we wouldn't ask the sinner to lead prayer. And what I mean by that, by sinner, is one that is continuing a life of sin. Because we know that we've all fallen short, and that we've all sinned and fall short of the glory of God, Romans 3:23. But, and also, in that matter, as far as people that are leading, I think someone brought this up in the last class, is this idea, we don't really know the condition of the one who's leading, but you wouldn't, they wouldn't necessarily have someone leading if they knew there was a problem with that condition. Because the only one that really knows is God. I mean, we can base it off of actions and what we see in their life and what we know about them, but the only one that truly knows is God. And again, like we've said, prayer is between us and God. But saying that, I mean, if one's devotion, I noted here, if one's devotion to God is in question for a good reason, would it be condoning his conduct by asking him to lead a public prayer?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, it would. So, if this man's devotion is in question for a good reason, we wouldn't or should not have him lead until we had reason to believe that this has been taken care of or corrected. And let's look at 2 John for a second. Let's look at verse 10. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this teaching, do not receive him into your house, and do not give him greeting. For the one who gives him a greeting participates in his evil deeds. So it's just the idea of, by doing that, you know, you're almost saying that you approve, because you're participating in these deeds. Now, I'm going to attempt to answer the question that was raised in Acts 10, but before we go on to that, do we have any other questions on this? Any comments or thoughts? Yes, sir.
I think there's another script you can also use in line with all the other ones you suggested. In 1 Timothy chapter 2, in verse 8. Talking about prayer. There in verse 8 says, therefore I want men in every place to pray, lifting up holy hands without wrath and dissension. I think there the sense of holy hands is not thinking literally about your hands, but it's talking about the life. One can be separate, one be pure.
In contrast with the wrath and dissension. Okay. That's a good comment. So 1 Timothy 2:8. Any other thoughts or comments or no? Okay. Let's turn over to Acts 10 for a second. Now, the question was raised, and if I'm misunderstanding this, correct me, Jim, but the question was as far as Cornelius being heard, his prayers being heard before he was a Christian, is that...
Well, I mean, you've answered it, really.
Okay.
What you just said, I mean, I just want to clarify, and you really just answered what you just said.
Okay. But does anybody have any question on that? I mean, I've looked up some things on it, and I'll just briefly, if y'all look over at Acts 10, Well, number one, in verse 2, you see that he feared God. And then we see later part of that verse that he was prayed to God continually. If you look down at the end of verse 4, it says that your prayers and your alms have ascended as a memorial before God.
And that was, they're saying that the angel of God was the one that was saying that to Cornelius.
Right,
so.
Right. So I mean,
that says that.
Right, but the prayers were heard. Yes, yes. So there's no question that the prayers were heard. Verse 22, it talks about that he was righteous and a God-fearing man. When he was praying. In verse 31, it says again that your prayer has been heard and your alms have been remembered before God. And we see that at the end of, or in verse 35, said that the man who fears him and does what is right is welcome to him. But, so we definitely see that his prayer was heard. But it also calls him righteous and God-fearing. In some of the verses we just looked at, like in James 5:16, it says that this effective prayer was one coming from one that was righteous. And in, I think it was John 9, in John 9:31, now I just read the first part where it tells us, let me turn over there real quick. Says that we know that God does not hear sinners. But if anyone is God-fearing and does his will, he hears him. Okay, so we see something from there as well. So the righteous, those that are God-fearing. But it's interesting in Acts, okay, God hears him. But also, what does God do?
He delivers the message.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
It doesn't in any way justify it. I'm not.
No, I know that. I just.
Somebody in the assembly, you know, doesn't need to be a Christian.
Okay.
That God hears others besides Christians.
Okay. But he also provided the opportunity
right.
there to.
Exactly.
To. Okay. Any other thoughts or comments? Yes, sir.
So, you know, the question, does God hear sinners? It depends. You know, how we define
sinners, right?
We're
right.
Sinners.
Right.
I think these verses are clearly showing this. Is one, a sinner is one who is impenitent, one who is rebellious, who doesn't want to change, don't listen to God's will.
Right.
But in the case of Cornelius, for this prayer.
Right. He
apostate, who apostatized, I mean, and then he recognizes it every way, wants to get back, you know kind of hears him. So it's a condition of the heart that willing to change and get back.
Sort of attitude. Okay. Thank you.
I think the passage seeking you shall find. You know, anybody that's seeking God's will, I don't care what kind of state they're in, and maybe what kind of state of sin they're in. If they're seeking to find God's will, I don't care what, and I don't mean that in an ugly way, but whatever state they're in, as far as sin, they're going to find God's will. They're going to find the Word.
Okay.
And that's how God delivers the message, you see the Word.
All right.
Would it be a true statement to say that God hears everyone's prayers? It just depends on if he accepts it or not.
Right.
Because when you first come, I wasn't here Wednesday, but when you first come forward the first time to accept Christ as your Savior, and I mean, you are a complete sinner, never having God fearing before.
Right, but it's still the same idea of what Rocky's saying, because it's your attitude, it's what you're doing, and plus when. The way that word is used, of course, we know God's all-knowing. So He already knows. But the idea is it's not, He doesn't accept it.
Okay.
At least that's the way I understand it, that He doesn't accept it. And one good point about that, though, because when you look at in Matthew 25, just a quick point or observation, So then Matthew 25:46. Because indeed it has to do with our attitude. In Matthew 25:46, that's not what I meant. I'm sorry, I meant 1 Peter. I had a bunch of notes on there. I went to the wrong one. In 1 Peter 3:7, that's what I was looking for. We see this idea. Okay, what is being spoken of right here? This is talking about the godly living. Well, at least that's how they title it. So you have this idea of how people should be acting, and when you get into verse 7, it tells you something pretty interesting. Because, I mean, this is talking about Christians, isn't it? Okay. So, talking to a Christian says, you husbands, in the same way, live with your wives in an understanding way, as with someone weaker, since she is a woman, and show her honor as a fellow heir of the grace of life, so that your prayers will not be hindered. So, it tells us something about our life and the way we handle things, or maybe our attitude, if you will. We've got to be careful because our prayers can be hindered. I was just saying that because, I mean, here we are, we're looking at these that we're saying that aren't Christian. I just wanted to look at that verse because, I mean, we've got to be careful about us and not just think that, hey, I'm a Christian equals God's hearing me. So we need to think about our attitude towards things, our life, and all those things. Are there any more comments or thoughts on this before we're done with prayer? I know that was a long lesson there, but any other thoughts or comments? Yes, sir?
I think on this verse 7, you just went over, I think Lisa was asking this some classes ago about this verse. I'm glad you brought it up. I think it's always good, at least for me as a man, as I always read this verse, to go back and recall what it means. It says, in an understanding way, as a weaker vessel. Always there's some misunderstanding what that's talking about. And the best I understand it here is that, you know, we know that women are not inferior spiritually, not inferior in terms of mentally. No way really inferior, but they are under subjection. And the way I understand this verse to me is that weaker vessels are not talking about strength, but they're talking about how to handle them, treat them as a precious vessel. Be careful of how men deal with women in a husband-wife relationship. Treat them with delicacy as a vessel that, not weak in terms of strength, but in terms of care. So that nothing happens to that relationship. So I brought that up because I need to continually remind myself about my role as a husband and also what this verse really is teaching.
Okay. Thanks. Any other comments or thoughts? No? Okay. Lesson 5. In lesson 5, we're going to look at music as worship. So, what is music? Now, I put a definition from that I pulled up off the Webster's Online Dictionary. It says that, A is the science or art of ordering tones or sounds in succession, in combination, and in temporal relationships to produce a composition having unity and continuity. And B is vocal, instrumental, or mechanical sounds having rhythm, melody, or harmony. So after looking at this definition, that might help us a little bit as far as how the word is used. But if we're wanting to understand what is acceptable to God, then what acceptable music is, then we'll have to look at His Word. Okay, that we have to understand what is acceptable to Him. So as we looked at before in previous classes, worship has to do with God's worthiness. Okay, so if we're truly going to worship Him, and you want to truly worship with music because of His worthiness, then that means we'll have to do this in a way that pleases Him. And the only way that we can do that is through obedience. And if we're going to be obedient, we must understand that the only way to worship Him is in a way that He has authorized. Now, we can call it worship, and people do, but just because we call it worship, that doesn't make it that. You know, if something doesn't accord to His will, then He doesn't, you know, consider it as acceptable worship. So these are just things we need to keep in mind. And just a kind of a sad thought I had. One thing we need to keep in mind as far as worship. Number one is, who are we trying to please? Okay, are we trying to please God, or are we trying to please ourselves? So we need to think about that. And one thing that I noted in my notes was Matthew 22:37-39. You don't have to turn there. I think we're familiar with it. But it talks about the two greatest commandments as far as love God and love your neighbor. And then, well, number one, if you love God, then you're going to do His commandments, and or keep His commandments and do His will. And also, as far as if you love your neighbor, I just thought of, you know, because when we worship, maybe we can be teaching others. And we're not going to want to teach them error. So, and because I think the way some people worship, I'm not saying here or anything, but just the way some people of the world see how worship is done, they just see it and therefore accept it without basing it on anything. They just, oh, it's acceptable. And when that happens, those people that are doing it, they're teaching somebody something. And that was just a little side thought I'd had. We need to keep that in mind in our worship. Because we are teaching. And, you know, we need to, in everything that we do, we need to consider who we're doing it for. You know, are we doing it for God or doing it for ourselves? So it's important that we look at where we get these things from. Now, on the first part here, we're going to look at what I titled the instrumental or mechanical music. So, what does the Word of God teach us about music and worship? First, let's look at the instrumental or mechanical part of this definition. That was one of the parts of our definition. Now, you'll find examples of instrumental music in the Old Testament. And that's kind of the first thing I wanted to address before we look at some of the other parts of these definitions. The Old Testament speaks of musical instruments. And I know that's a question or something that comes up when you're speaking to other people. And that's correct. The Old Testament does speak of musical instruments. And they were used as worship or to worship with. But one question we've got to keep in mind is, who was doing this? Who did the instrumental music in the Old Testament? Was it just anybody, or were there certain people that did this?
The Levites.
Okay. case of the Levites. Let's just turn over to 1 Chronicles real quick. In 1 Chronicles 15, 16. Then David spoke to the chiefs of the Levites to appoint the relatives to relatives the singers with instruments of music, harps, lyres, loud sounding cymbals to raise the sounds of joy. And then you can also look at 23, verse 4 and 5, still in 1 Chronicles. It just gives some numbers and stuff, but that wasn't the main point what I'm looking at. But of these 24,000 were to oversee the work of the house of the Lord, and 6,000 were officers and judges, and 4,000 were gatekeepers, and 4,000 were praising the Lord with instruments with David, or which David made for giving praise. So, and these were just a couple of verses that I had noted to get this idea or to show who was doing this worship with instruments. So we see that we can't use the Old Testament to authorize instrumental music today. And one reason is because even though instrumental music was used in the Old Testament, if we lived back in those times, you and I wouldn't be the ones that were doing that. So the fact of the matter is that there are other things besides musical instruments that we will not find in the New Testament as part of worship. Didn't they have sacrifices in the Old Testament? Okay? Maybe these people that are using the Old Testament to say it's okay to use instrumental music, do they practice sacrifices? And I just bring that up because how can you want to include one thing from there but exclude another? So, because they want to exclude sacrifices. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, I would agree that sacrifices are not authorized or needed today. But this isn't because of fact, this is because of fact, not feeling. And when we look at Hebrews, okay, Hebrews 8:7. What is this telling us? What about in connection with the old covenant?
If the first covenant had done everything that it was, that was necessary, then we wouldn't have needed a new one.
Okay, so there is a need for a new covenant. Okay, if you jump over to the 10th chapter. Excuse me. In Hebrews 10, 9 through 10, it tells us that he takes away the first in order to establish the second. And Jesus Christ, in verse 10, it says, offered one time for all times. And then also in verse 12, one sacrifice for the sins of all times. And for by one offering he has perfected for all time those who are sanctified. Verse 14. So there's no longer a need for these sacrifices. And in that same way, we need to understand that some things that were done under the old law were done away with. Now, if you do a word study on the words music, musical, instrument, instruments, because what I did was, and we'll touch on it as we go through the different parts of this lesson, but what I did was go off that definition. I did word studies on these different words that we're using the definition to help us understand some things about music or how it's used in reference to what we're using it for. Now, you'll notice that the only time these words that I just mentioned here, music, musical, instrument, and instruments, the only time they were used in the New Testament in connection with music or musical instruments was in Luke 15:25. And the reason why I say that, because there were a couple other times it was used, but that instrument, when they used that word, it wasn't talking about an instrument. Okay, it was talking about being used as, if I remember correctly, a tool or something. I have to look that up. But the point is, when in connection with music, the only time that it used that term in the New Testament was in Luke 15:25. Let's look over there for a minute. Okay, in Luke 15:25, it says, "Now his older son was in the field, and when he came and approached the house, he heard music and dancing." What was taking place here? What
celebration?
Okay, it was a celebration. What was this story here that we're?
The son had come home. Okay, the prodigal son.
Okay, return of the prodigal son. So that's the only thing I found in the New Testament as far as instrumental music. And we know here this wasn't, what was being done here was not worship. Okay, this was a referred to a celebration, okay, because of the return. So does this mean that the New Testament does not teach music as a part of worship just because we looked through here and we couldn't find anything on musical instruments in the New Testament? So does that mean it doesn't teach on music?
No.
Okay. But it does tell us something. It does tell us what we're looking for. We might be looking for the wrong words, or we might have the wrong meaning in mind. So the problem could be that we might already have a meaning in our head of what music is. And this could be incorrect. So what can the Scripture teach us? Now remember, our definition said that music could be, and it's vocal, instrumental, or mechanical sounds having rhythm, melody, and harmony. Note the words instrumental and mechanical were not found in the Bible. You will find the words instrument and instruments in the New Testament, but they did not have to do with music. And we do not see examples of instrumental music in the New Testament. Vocal music. Keep in mind that just because something was in the Old Law, because we started off looking at some of these things that were in the Old Law as far as instrumental music and sacrifices, but that in itself is not why we don't use certain things. I mean, what I'm talking about here on singing, my point is you will see singing in there as well in the Old Testament. But we have example in the New Testament of using singing that is authorized. So we need to understand that just because something was in the Old Law doesn't mean that we automatically exclude it either. Singing as worship was in the Old Law, but we also see examples of those who did the very same thing in the New Testament. But before we look at the New Testament examples, let's look at some things that we see in the Old Testament in reference to singing. There was a bunch of references in the Old Testament, and which, again, in itself does not make it right with what we do today, but this does harmonize with the New Testament teaching. And we'll look at, which we'll look at some of that in a minute, but there were a bunch of references, especially in the Psalms, of singing. And I just want to look at a couple of these just to give us some ideas or some things that are in connection with the thoughts in singing. In Judges, Judges 5:3. Says, "Hear, O kings, give ear, O rulers. I, to the Lord, I will sing. I will sing praise to the Lord, the God of Israel." So what is something that he's singing about? Or what is he doing here while he's singing?
Praising the Lord.
Okay, so praising God. And he says that I'll praise, or I will sing praise to the Lord. What about in 2 Samuel? Says, "Therefore I will give thanks to you, O Lord, among the nations. I will sing praises to your name." So again, we see this idea of praising and giving thanks. And in 1 Chronicles 16 and 23, says, "Sing to the Lord, all the earth. Proclaim good tidings of His salvation from day to day." So, what is this? What's one of the things this could be speaking of, or what is it talking about here that they're singing about?
Glorifying God.
Okay, glorifying God, His worthiness, His power. In Psalms 5:11. Says, "But let all who take refuge in you be glad. Let them ever sing for joy. And may you shelter them, that those who love your name may exult in you." In this verse here, this psalm contrasts. Well, let me ask then, what are they talking about here? Who are the ones that should want to sing in this verse?
Those who trust in the Lord.
Okay. So they should want to sing, because this psalm contrasts the righteous and the wicked. In verse 11, that's when it's speaking of the righteous. "Let us all who take refuge in you be glad. Let them ever sing for joy. And may you shelter them, that those who love your name may exult in you," or "rejoice greatly in you." In Psalm 7:17, it says, "I will give thanks to the Lord according to His righteousness, and will sing praise to the Lord Most High." I'm just going to reference a couple here, just so we, because we see this idea over and over. Psalm 95. In verse 1 and 2, it says, "O come, let us sing joy to the Lord. Let us shout joyfully to the rock of our salvation." And we will turn over to Psalm 100. Psalm 100. Says, shout joyfully to the Lord, all the earth. Serve the Lord with gladness. Come before Him with joyful singing. Know that the Lord Himself is God. It is He who has made us. It is He who has made us, and not we ourselves. We are His people and the sheep of His pasture. Enter His gates with thanksgiving and His courts with praise. Give thanks to Him. Bless His name. For the Lord is good. His loving kindness is everlasting, and His faithfulness to all, and His faithfulness to all generations. So, what are some of the reasons that were mentioned in these verses, as far as what they were praying about?
Because He was God.
Okay.
He's the Creator.
He's the Creator.
He's a protector.
Okay.
Merciful.
Okay, and then.
Endures forever.
So all of, because of all of those things, in verse 2 says, serve the Lord with gladness and come before Him with joyful singing. Because keeping all of these things in mind that it's talking about, we should want to sing with gladness. There's, they have something to sing about. In Psalm 105, just sing to Him, sing praises to Him, speak of all His wonders. So we see the reasons, some of the reasons that they sang about, or because of the gladness, and they were wanting to praise God and give thanks. And those are some of the same reasons we're going to look at. In the New Testament, we're going to see some of the same ideas. Now, as we said, we see this word vocal in our definition of music. I'm going back to our definition, some of the things that we're looking at. Now, although you won't find this word in the Bible either, not the word vocal, there are words you can find that are vocal that have to do with music. And that is what we just looked at, one of the things we just looked at in the Old Testament. And let's see what the New Testament has to say about this word singing. Because you do find the word singing in the New Testament. When I did that word study, in the New Testament you'll find the words sing and singing. Under sing I found Romans 15:9, 1 Corinthians 14:15, Hebrews 2:12 and James 5:13. Under singing, you'll find Matthew 26:30, Mark 14:26, and I've listed a couple other there. We'll pick back up here in our next class. Thank you.